Welcome to the Free to Choose Media Podcast. Today's podcast is the 1990s discussion portion of Created Equal, part of an update to Volume 5 of the 10-part public television series Free to Choose. Milton Friedman is joined by guests Thomas Sowell of the Hoover Institution and Michael Kinsley of the New Republic to discuss some of the ideas presented in the documentary segment of Created Equal. Listen now, and don't forget to subscribe to get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.
I'm Linda Chavez. I hope you've enjoyed Created Equal, the last in the Free to Choose series. Joining Dr. Friedman to discuss the concept of equality are Thomas Sowell of the Hoover Institution and Michael Kinsley of the New Republic. Tell me, Mr. Kinsley, is individual freedom all that matters, or should we be concerned about the unequal distribution of wealth?
I think, of course, we should be concerned. Let me make two concessions, however, at the very beginning. Number one, capitalism is an economic system that benefits everybody, including those at the bottom, as Milton Friedman has so eloquently pointed out. Capitalism requires incentives. Incentives necessarily imply some degree of inequality. Second of all, as was pointed out towards the end of the show, even apart from economics, radical leveling experiments have been disasters for human freedom, Pol Pot, Stalin, and so on. Having made those two concessions, I do not think you have therefore said that the government has no role in promoting equality. Much of the inequality we see around us cannot be explained as capitalism working its will in textbook circumstances. Some of it is just luck, the most boring example being inherited wealth. Some of it is the result of economic activity that is capitalist but is not really productive. I think even Milton Friedman would concede there is that category. Some aspects of investment banking, leap up is the obvious example from the 80s. Some is the result of government policy, for example, auctioning off valuable television licenses. Secondly, meritocracy. Let's talk
you
about...
You mean not auctioning off television licenses.
Not auctioning, of course. Giving away television licenses.
Right.
Even when capitalism is working in the textbook way, increasing everybody's wealth, much of the qualities that are being rewarded there are essentially innate. And the term meritocracy really disguises that, and implies that intelligence, talent, such as the students of the Hewitt-Emanuel School, are exactly the same as hard work and initiative. And it seems to me those are very different categories of reward. So because of that, I think a certain amount of government-induced redistribution is not a bad idea.
But is it really redistribution, or, Dr. Sowell, is it putting people at the starting line, as Dr. Friedman said?
Well, I'm still trying to see the connection between what he said before and what he said at the end. No, what the government is trying to do is to set up programs justified on the assumption that they are equalizing. I think the crucial thing is that when you try to create this equality, you don't create the equality, you create something else. I've been doing studies now for 20 years of programs designed to increase equality. They increase inequality because even when the programs are designed for disadvantaged groups, they help the affluent members of disadvantaged groups, while the lower members of those groups fall further behind than ever before. And not just in the United States, in India, to some extent in Malaysia, the very same thing is happening.
But would you say that that is a theoretical necessity, or is that because of these specific programs being badly designed? Mr. Friedman, Dr. Friedman.
Name a well-designed one.
Yes.
Well, you designed one, the negative income tax.
I did not design that in the sense in which you mean it. I favor the negative income tax as a way of getting from where we are now to where I would ultimately like to be. It's a less bad alternative than our present mess.
But
it's not in and of itself a good alternative, no.
But you wouldn't favor it, but it would not, it seems to me, suffer from the defect that Professor Sowell sees in the welfare programs we have today of large bureaucracies, of inadvertent beneficiaries, and so on and so forth. And it would, seems to me, be possible to redistribute wealth.
But is it a good idea to redistribute wealth?
It is possible to redistribute wealth. The question is whether in the process of redistributing wealth, you don't inevitably accompany it by side effects, which have the characteristic that they make things worse rather than better. Because what happens, every time you go to redistribute wealth, you establish a pie there for somebody to grab. And there are lots of people around trying to grab them. And they are going to go down to Washington or to the State House or wherever it is, and work and try to convert that program into one, which although it started out fine, almost all of these welfare programs that you and I now regard as having bad effects, started out fine. The new broom sweeps clean.
I wouldn't necessarily concede that every welfare program we have now has entirely bad effects.
Doesn't have an entirely bad effect.
Or even primarily bad effects.
Well, name one, which
my
on the whole...
The Head Start program is a great success. Now, does that come under, maybe that comes under your category of equality of opportunity rather than equality of result. But nevertheless, it is a major government program that is taking tax money and spending it on poor people.
I think that if you're going to say the government should do things of that sort to help people, to help themselves, to rise up and meet some standards, whatever the theoretical objections might be to it, I think that the political objections are relatively minor, that very few people would argue against that. The polls that I've seen suggest that almost every segment of the society would support it.
Now, well, then why is it that even today, 20 years or 25 years after it started, Head Start is only available to a small fraction of the people who qualify
Thank
for it?
Thank you. That's our whole point. Because that isn't the kind of program that can get political support. That isn't the kind of program that brings the fancy paid lobbyists down to Washington.
But no,
if you look at
no,
what
surely...
government spends, look at what government spends, and ask yourself how much of it can be characterized as being spent for purposes that you would regard as desirable.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right that the government redistribution programs very often redistribute from the worse off to the better off or from the middle to the middle. Social Security, Medicare, the farm price support program is obviously an egregious example of that. But surely it is conservatives and Republicans and people who consider themselves allied with Professor Sol and Professor Friedman who prevented the expansion of the Head Start program.
I doubt it very much. What I think prevented the expansion of the Head Start program was the ability of the people for these other programs getting in first. Let me illustrate very directly about the kind of people you represent. The worst program from the point of view of taking money from the poor and giving it to the rich is none of those you mentioned. It's higher education in the United States. There's no program in the United States that so clearly taxes the poor to benefit the people of the present rich and of the people who are going to be rich.
I mean, the student loan program.
It's not only the student, it's state universities
state
in every state. It's total government spending on higher education, whether in the form of so-called loan programs, most of which are grant programs, or in the form of straight. Now, have you had any, which lobby has been more influential? The lobby in favor of expanding that program or the lobby in favor of expanding the Head Start program?
Well, yeah, I'm going to dig myself into a hole here, but how far do you push this logic? Do you put why higher education and not secondary and primary
education?
Oh,
I agree on secondary. I'm in favor of, I think the same thing is true in secondary and primary, except that secondary and primary, from a redistributive point of view, is not as bad.
Because everyone goes.
That's
just
right.
Just about everyone goes.
And it has it's compulsory. Personally, I'm in favor of privatizing secondary and primary and ultimately getting rid of government subsidy, except, and here I would agree, and here I'm going to go to your side, that I would agree that there remains a residual necessity of providing for the children whose parents are, for whatever reason, not in a position to finance their schooling.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
But, you know, I don't think it's accidental that the emphasis has been at the higher education level when it comes to money. Again, if you look at other countries, you see the same thing. When they say they're going to help the poor and the downtrodden in India, they do it by allowing preferential admission to medical schools. Well, these people out there in the villages who don't have enough to eat are not going to go to any medical schools. That they always start at the top, that they want to give out the goodies that have the prestige and the visibility. They're not interested in raising the test scores, you know, in some Harlem school.
Well, surely, would you say that you would prefer it if society did not offer an opportunity for a higher education to everyone, whether they could afford it or not? Or would you prefer some other system of accomplishing that goal?
You've evaded the question. What's a society? What you really mean is, would I prefer it that government not offer?
That's
and
right.
And the answer is yes.
Well, if government doesn't offer it, how can you be assured
because
that it's going to happen?
Because society does. Look, long before the government was providing, federal government certainly, long before the federal government was providing subsidies.
The state governments were providing
state
subsidies.
Governments
well, there's
were,
no difference in principle.
But even long before that, the earliest colleges and universities in the United States were established not by state governments. Harvard, you went to, was established by private people.
That was not an opportunity to go to Harvard is not universally available. Am I naive? My impression was that the GI Bill after World War II, correct me if I'm wrong, gave millions of people who otherwise would not have had the opportunity to go to higher education to go.
It
what
did.
I would say is, let's have a system where I think there are abuses. The student loan program was clearly redistribution. But the basic principle that it is the role of government to make sure that everyone has the opportunity who can qualify for it and who can make use of it for an excellent higher education is a good one, and you mitigate the redistributive effects of that through the income tax system.
The problem is to get stuck on objectives and not on outcomes. Of course, that would be a desirable outcome. It is desirable that everybody have the opportunity. I'm not questioning that, provided he's willing to pay for it, either before or after. I do not think there's any justification whatsoever for people who do not go to college subsidizing people who do.
Well, surely, I mean, I think if you want to set up a system where you loan the money, you pay it back over the long run, I think that's fine. Surely, a progressive income tax system roughly approximates precisely that system. The people who go to college have higher opportunity, they end up making more money, and under a progressive tax system, they will therefore pay more money over the course of their lives to the government, which will be used to fund this system, among other things.
You mean a graduated income tax system, because what's called a progressive income tax system is not progressive at all. If you look at the actual payment of taxes by the populace, it is not true, fortunately, I would say, that higher income classes pay a higher percentage of their income.
I'm with you on that. You're arguing my side of the defense once again.
No, but each time you look forward in hope.
Yes, in other words, you keep telling me how these are wonderful ideas. It's just that they never work out in practice. It's like the Marxists who are telling us that Eastern Europe wasn't really socialism. Nothing that ever existed on this earth was ever really socialism. It's only in their imagination. So at some point, you have to ask yourself, could it be that this principle cannot work out in practice with human beings as they exist on this planet?
Let me say two things to that. Number one, I'm certainly not saying that it never works out in practice. I think that, for example, the University of California higher education system is actually one of the jewels of Western civilization.
I've taught in that system.
Do you really wish it didn't exist?
Yes.
Well,
you mean it's a jewel of Western civilization that California, which has the most extensive state system of schooling in the country, should have a smaller fraction of youngsters of the age of 60 of the appropriate age graduate from college than the average for the country? That's a fact. Why is it a fact?
Because they're spending too much on Berkeley, is that?
No. Because the kids who go to California's universities and colleges drop out. 50% of the people who enter as freshmen in UCLA drop out before they graduate. And why?
Why?
Because this is a state system in which you have entry is essentially widespread and free, and the result of it is the quality of the schooling that is given is very low. It's a place where people go to have a good time, not to have an education. It's a nice interlude between high school and the real world. And it's because, let me ask you something. Do you really think that people appreciate something they don't pay for?
I didn't pay for my higher education, and I certainly appreciate it.
You're one of the rare people, isn't it?
That's
not my impression.
You will agree that in general.
As a general principle of life, certainly.
People, if they don't pay for it, if they get it for nothing, they value it at nothing. And what happens is that insofar as there are any large number of people like that, any large number of kids who go to college just because it's an easy, cheap, free, pleasant thing to do, it destroys it for ones who would like to get something.
Yes.
Whenever the government is giving away things instead of simply redistributing money, obviously there are inefficiencies. Anything that's free, like people use too much water if their water isn't metered. Higher education, no doubt, suffers from the same fact. I want to get to something else that Tom Sowell said, this analogy to socialism, which is one of the things that sticks in my craw. As I said at the beginning, obviously there are levels of redistribution that are nightmares. I do not think you can analogize from socialism to the progressive income tax.
No, you missed the point entirely. I was saying that you're making the argument that they're making, which is this is a wonderful idea. It's just that when we come to specific examples of it, it always ends up in disaster.
And
yet somehow it still remains a wonderful idea. You mentioned California. I taught there. There's another reason for the problems of the California system, and that is that the people who are in a position to appropriate the rents, as we say, do so, namely the faculty, that these are research factories. These are not teaching places. I can remember in faculty meetings, whenever I would mention the students or the taxpayers, there'd be a knowing smile as if, oh, Sowell has this thing, you know, and they would tolerate it and go on because it is run for the professors. I was on
Is it your impression that private universities such as Harvard, Yale, and Princeton are not run for the professors to the same degree?
Not to the same degree. They are run for the professors, again, because all of them are also getting government money.
But surely it's not just that. It's because they're large bureaucratic institutions.
No, but before the government money got there, you had much higher teaching loads. For example, at Columbia, when Bazin wrote this book about the teacher in the 1940s, he mentioned the teaching load at Columbia was 15 semester hours. A rural college out in the boondocks with no reputation at all would not have people teaching like that. As you poured more government money in, you got more and more people doing less and less teaching.
If we can get off the issue of universities and get back to the issue for a moment of income redistribution.
Fact of life, a fact of history. The greatest period of eleemosynary activity in United States history was in the 19th century when government was very small. That's when the great bulk of the private colleges and universities were founded. Harvard was even earlier, of course. That's when you had the Red Cross, the Boy Scouts, you name one after another.
Yes, but Milton, there were the level of services to the poor, the level of redistribution, if you want to call it that, that went on in the 19th century was obviously far lower than it is today. There was not health care for the poor universally or even approaching what we have today. There was not education for the poor that there is today. Now, if you want to say the government should not be involved in these forms of redistribution, I think you should have the courage of your convictions and say and recognize that the redistribution will not take place and not sort of hide behind the hope that private eleemosynary efforts will.
But I don't agree with your interpretation of the fact. The great private nonprofit hospitals were all founded in the 19th century. In many ways, the poor had better access, the very poor. The saying used to be when I was growing up, this was a long, long time ago before we had this great development back in the 1920s. The standard saying was the very poor can get good medicine, the very rich can get good medicine, the people in between are the ones who are squeezed.
Look, our healthcare system is a mess, and for many reasons.
It is a mess.
Because it's not free market. But and I have to defer to your expertise, but I find it very hard to believe that the poor had better access to health care in the 19th century than they have today.
Well, let me give you another example. The immigrants who came from Europe, my parents and other people, there were very active and effective eleemosynary institutions to help them out to enable them to get started.
Is fairness not at issue at all? Should we just give up on this notion, Dr. Sowell?
Well, it depends what you mean by fairness. If you're talking about fairness as opportunity, certainly. But that's wholly different from the notion of redistributing. I'm appalled at the notion that there's some people out there who are permanently called the poor, as if they're born with a scarlet P on their forehead. The great thing that's happened for the poor in this country is they stopped being poor. And they stopped being poor because you did not have the government control of the markets that we're slowly building up. And as you've now begun to add that, now we're talking about permanent underclasses. And again, the people who are saying these wonderful things don't ask, how did it work out? What happened?
My point is a sort of much more elementary one than that. Where you end up in life's rat race is, to a large degree, a function of luck.
Absolutely.
It is not a function of talent is luck. As you point out, inherited wealth, inherited talent, same thing.
Yeah.
It is fate. And it seems to me that given that, if there is a way to mitigate fate somewhat with minimum damage to the economy, to the total production of the economy, that is a very good thing to do.
Agreed.
You don't have any problem with it in principle. It's only in practice that you
No. I have the difference between us is altogether different. The difference between us is I think that you are more likely to achieve that, far more likely to achieve that, with a minimal state and a minimal government than you are with a big government. That the private economy, that the market should not be interpreted so narrowly. It includes charitable activity. It was an expression of market activity when Carnegie established private libraries all over the country. It was a mark of private activity, and a market activity when these nonprofit hospitals were established. What my argument is that a more effective means of achieving our common objectives, our objectives are the same. I agree with you. Where people end up is tremendously amount of luck.
I hope you've enjoyed Free to Choose and that you'll continue to think about the ideas we've discussed and the way they affect your lives.
Want more episodes like this? Don't forget to subscribe and get updates each week for the Free to Choose Media Podcast.